I want to give an example, a historical example of why the capacitor in my Earthing Life Enhancer is designed the way it is. There's some precedence. E.V. Gray was a businessman who didn't know anything about electronics or electrical theory, but the motor which bears his name was originally designed by Marvin Cole and then taken over by Richard Hackenberger. Richard Hackenberger had a challenge on his hands. They had this device, and they didn't know what... Well, they had the power. They were taking power from a lead-acid battery, I think one or two. And yet, their power converter, whatever you want to call it, that took the energy from the battery and processed it before delivering it to the electric motor, produced so much excess energy. Bing Crosby had a test... lab. A few of us know this, and he liked to verify and validate the inventions of inventors for their sake as an independent third-party testing lab. So he had tested the E.V. Gray motor of the Marvin Cole design, and they found that it had an overunity, a COP, a coefficient of performance of nearly 200 to 1. That meant that the electrical energy feeding the electric motor was not the source of the energy, the excess energy that was being delivered to the motor. It was nearly 200 times more than what was being drawn from the battery. But that was the Marvin Cole design. For some reason, Richard Hackenberger had a problem on his hands in which he didn't know what to do with the excess energy. I don't know, maybe Marvin Cole never solved that problem. Be that as it may. At first, Richard Hackenberger thought, well, we'll put the energy into a second battery. We'll just dump it in a second battery. So we'll use this battery as a source. Now, the battery being used as a dump is not unlike grounding out a circuit. But you're dealing with the situation of a car, insulated from the road, elevated by rubber tires, and we really can't depend on the ground as a source to ground out the excess energy so as not to burn up the circuitry. So he decided to use a battery, a second battery, or a second bank of batteries, and no matter how much in the way of batteries he used to dump all of this excess energy, because they couldn't control the amount they were producing. All they could do is produce a huge amount in excess, far greater than what was being drawn from the batteries, and then deal with the excess somehow. Well, they didn't know how to deal with the excess, so dumping it into the batteries blew up the batteries. And, you know, they were beside themselves for a little while anyway on how to solve the problem. It turns out that they did not assess the problem. That's why they did not solve it right away, but they did eventually. And I'm going to get to the solution in a minute, but first I'm going to tell you why the problem was misassessed. They were producing an excess of dielectrical energy, not electromagnetic. We're trained electrical engineers and physicists, the electromagnetic spectrum, as if that's all existed. But we also have the dielectrical spectrum based on the kind of wave mechanics occurring in the kind of field in which they occur. The field, in large part, determines the mechanics of the wave. I don't think the wave determines the mechanics of the field to any great degree. I think the field is a kind of a macroscopic wave condition that influences all the waves inside its scope. Anyway, be that as it may, they were dealing with an excess of dielectrical energy which has none of the characteristics of electromagnetics, so what the hell were they dumping it into a battery for? Well, they didn't know. They did not assess the energy. They just thought, it must be electromagnetic. They just assumed it, because it was coming from a battery, going through the power unit, but the power unit was not magnifying the energy. It was getting it from somewhere else, directly from the environment. And the easiest energy to get from the environment is not electromagnetic. You got to pay for that energy, big time. That's why we have hydroelectric plants and the power companies, because they got to go to a lot of trouble to take electromagnetic energy from the environment. Wind power, that is a great deal of work. You know how much work it takes to spin a wind turbine? A lot of work to produce electromagnetic energy. To extract electromagnetic energy from the environment. Extracting dielectrical energy is a whole lot easier, but in a sense, in terms of effort, it's harder though, it makes up for the lack of effort by being harder in terms of the skillfulness required. All it takes is to throw off a fine-tuned dielectrical energy producing machine or generator to prevent it from working properly. It doesn't take much. Those things have been known historically to be prone to error and failure on the part of inventors because they didn't pay attention to details sufficiently to get the thing to work and keep working. Anyway, what they were producing was a dielectrical surge of excess energy, and so the proper place to put it is in a capacitor. But as it turns out, the proper type of capacitor to put it in was a one-sided capacitor. In other words, the other plate of the capacitor had to be a floating plate. Now, the toroid that is normally or oftentimes put on top of a Tesla coil is an open capacitor. It just, you know, it goes off into space, is the other side of that capacitor plate. The toroid on top is one, I believe, if I have it correctly, and I could be wrong about that, though. All right, so I'm going to stay away from a Tesla coil because I've never dealt with them. Anyway. In Evie Gray's case, what Richard Hackenberger learned to do is he took 9 copper bands of copper sheeting, but they were in strips or bands, and he took the chassis of the motor, the electric motor, and constructed it out of Teflon. Okay? Teflon is a dielectric. It's well known for its dielectrical properties. Delron, Teflon, These are very good dielectrical mediums to sink dielectrical energy into, but you got to polarize it. So the coils, the electromagnetic coils on the rotors and stators inside the motor, they served as one plate. The chassis made of Teflon served as the dielectric separation between two plates, and the opposing plate were 9 copper bands placed, or inlaid, I should say, inlaid into inserts on the outside of the Teflon chassis, and the band went around in circular bands. So there were 9 circular bands of copper bands or sheeting in the shape of bands. They were not touching each other, they were separated from each other, and they went around circumferentially around the circumference of the chassis of the EV Gray of the electric motor. And so they created the polarization needed such that the Teflon could then serve as the bounded dielectric. Because without the 9 bands, the dielectric is non-bounded going off to infinity, okay? But, you know, extending out beyond the Teflon. And that makes for a very weak capacitance, storage potential, for the Teflon, and we don't want that. We want to jack it up. We want it to store lots of capacitance. So we have to bring in the plate or the opposing plate from infinity by placing copper banded plates or bands inlaid to the outside of that Teflon chassis. So this is the precedence, the historical precedence for designing the capacitor the way I do within the Earthing Life Enhancer. I didn't directly take from there when I designed this. In fact, I didn't design it. I just kind of stumbled into it. And then afterwards, oh, is that what I did? And then I realized the significance. I was repeating what Richard Hackenberger had done successfully. And this is why my device is a complete system, because it not only amplifies the electromagnetic component of the signals going back and forth between the body and the earth, grounded to the earth, the body grounded to the earth, but also the dielectrical component of the energy going back and forth as well. And nobody has to be too smart, although you have to be a little, because I certainly didn't know till recently, to know that the Earth is a huge reservoir of dielectric energy. Why? Not because of the iron. The iron might be a source of electromagnetic, maybe, but the dielectric is coming from the quartz within the Earth, being subjected to intense pressures of push and pull, strains, all kinds of pressures that are causing it to act like a piezoelectric crystal, or a whole sphere, a whole field of piezoelectric crystalline substance. You know, feldspar, quartz sand, you name it, all the different types of quartzes and clays. All of those silica have all kinds of neat properties of piezoelectric properties. Now, actually, I don't know about clay, whether or not the alumino aspect of aluminosilicate clay dampens the piezoelectric ability of silica. I don't know. I shouldn't say about clay. But sand, quartz, anything along those lines are going to generate a huge amount of dielectrical energy. But the sand quartz is also going to serve, and the feldspar, as a huge sink of potential capacitance to store the dielectric within the body of the Earth. So it's not enough to amplify the electromagnetic signals going back and forth between the body and the Earth. We may be predominantly electromagnetic. Okay, maybe, granted. But the Earth, if anything, has got this huge dielectrical component besides the electromagnetic field that it generates. It's also generating a dielectric field. So that in all likelihood, the body is generating both fields as well. In any case, be that as it may, I'm not going to worry about whether or not the body actually produces a dielectric field. I'll leave that to your imagination. We know it produces an electromagnetic field because we know it generates bioelectricity. The electric field, of course, is just one half of the electromagnetic field, the magnetic field being the other half. So it's confusing, I guess, to use the word dielectric because it sounds like the electric. Oh, is that the same as the electric field? Maybe not. Yet it's not much better to use the term electrostatic because the dielectric field is anything but static. It's constantly in a dynamic range of motion and changes, just like the electromagnetic field and waves within the electromagnetic field are. So it's this is my example, and should serve the proof of the pudding that I stand in good company, Richard Hackenberger included.